position of a 12892 real one.
Squadron Leader Drobinsky, real one. Whereabouts were you born, please?
I was born in a place called Ostrog, which was right on the border between Poland and Russia, on the river Horin, it's called.
Which year was this?
It's 1918, 23rd of October
1919. What did your father do for a living?
My father was an official in the post office. In fact, he was in that town, the master of the post office and telegraph.
Were you educated in that same town?
Yes, to begin with. Then we moved to a place called Dubno, and then to Lutsk, L-U-C-K. And that's but in the same province, in Volhynia. Volhyn, in Polish.
How did you come to be in the Air Force?
Well, I wasn't then to be a flyer. In a place called Dubno, where I went to the higher school, it's, I was about 13, 14. I used to see a gentleman dressed up in uniform, and he used to come on holidays. He was a pilot, member of Air Force, and he had a very nice uniform, and of course he had a very nice dagger hanging by the side, and I looked at the dagger and said, God, I really would like to have the dagger. After to have the dagger, I would have to finish and get do the matriculation and before I could go to the cadet school, which I did.
Which year?
That was 1937. In 1935, I was lucky enough to be accepted for the gliding course, which was free of charge. And there were about 30 of us altogether on that course, which was in the capital mountains. And it was fascinating flying with that engine quiet and everything else, because it was just short jumps to begin with. But then we got a little bit higher and higher, and we flew for maybe about 3 or 4 minutes, which was almost eternity at that time. So the following year, that was in 1976, I went on the motor course, flying aeroplanes with as it were, the gliders with engines, and in a place called Maslov. And I finished that course, and I loved it. And when I had my matriculation, I applied for the acceptance to the cadet school. And I had to sit an exam there, written and oral, verbal examination. And fortunately, I passed, and so I was accepted. That was in 1938. I got called in 1937. I got a letter to report in my town, in the hometown which I lived there, Lutsk, for 3 months of sort of recruit course with infantry. And then that was in September, beginning of September. So I was going to be there September, October, November, and holiday, Christmas holiday at home, and after that would report to Dremlin, which was cadet Air Force cadet school. Well, you can imagine the things that we had to do, because although it's for our own good now, I accept the explanation. But at that time it was absolutely madness, because NCOs who were instructors for all, because we had army, professional army, and everybody who was 21 had to go there for a couple of years, do the service, and go do the ordinary life. You could apply when you were 18 if you wanted to go to higher education. You finish that and you'd be not interrupted. But sometimes at 21, in the middle of the university, and you have to go and spend 2 years. Sometimes they cut down to 18 months at certain special circumstances. But to make a long story short, they were there in infancy. And knowing that we were only there for three months, the instructors did everything that is possible within law to make us remember that recruit course. There were three of us at the time, and we all were put out for heaviest, dirtiest, wettest duties, and that anything that went, we were just automatically asked to volunteer. And of course, we had to volunteer, otherwise, it would be difficult. More even difficult, even more difficult. So, on the beginning of January 1938, I arrived to Denver, the cadet school. And that's how I started.
How long is the course of the cadet school?
Well, usually it was 3 years before you become second lieutenant. But in 1938 finished, 1939 began, and of course the situation was a little bit cutting up, if I may say so, between Germany and Poland. Well, Czechoslovakia was taken over in 1938, and Germany wanted the so-called corridor, take over the corridor passes to the East Russia. And so all the courses and instructors and real were on a double time, as it were. And we didn't cancel the Easter holiday, was cancelled, didn't go home for Easter. We were training there, flying and theory and practice and all that stuff. So by the we put 2 years into one almost in schooling and exercising. And of course, on the 1st of September, the war started.
What were you doing then?
Then we were on a higher qualifying course on the fighter pilots, which was the military, of course, military plane, like the other, except that was the plane that was going to be used in the war.
Was it a Demblin?
No, well, it belonged to Demblin, but it was satellite airfield to Demblin. We were there, flying, when the first bomb dropped.
Can you describe it?
Well, we weren't quite sure what it was, but a great explosion we heard. And, of course, soon after then, the message came at 5 o'clock. The Germans crossed the border, and they are bombing Warsaw. Well, we didn't know what to do. I mean, we still learners that are not fully fledged, although we were a rank of... We had the rank after at second year as a sergeant with knowledge or whatever it is, and we had different border on our uniforms signs, which were epaulettes. We had different white and red twisted material around the epaulettes. So that was going that we were cadets, not ordinary soldiers. But we didn't know what was happening then, even though we were more intelligent than ordinary soldiers, if I may say so. But nobody knew. And we went for the orders. Six, there were about 140 pilots training there. 140 pilots training there. That's on the fighter course. Because there were another place, the same year, there were about 30, between 30 and 40 pilots on the bomber, they were training. And there were nearly 200, around 200 pupils in that year, in 1938 in Dublin. And then we split out for these two courses. So six were called up and took the aeroplanes, which was PZL 7. And flew to the nearest unit, which was at Lvov.
Who had ordered you to do it?
Only commanding officer of the school. I expect, we knew later, we were told, of course, that he's got orders from the high authority, from the CNC down the line. But then we had only to spare six airplanes, plus they were in the in the service, being not used, able to fly at that time because of service and rearming and all the rest of it. So another four, I think, went later on the same day. But the rest, we had to get on the coaches and left the place. And we were ordered to go through towns down to the south border, to the border, Romanian, Polish-Romanian border, because we were told that English, British planes would be coming. To make it clear, there was, if you recall, no, you wouldn't recall because you were not alive, but in August, July and August 1939, was frantic talks took place between France, England and Germany. And England guaranteed mutual agreement of between England and Poland, and between, and before, a few months before, there was a mutual agreement between France and Poland that in case of anybody is attacked, we will assist or will be assisted. And that on the, in, toward the beginning of August, the agreement was signed with Great Britain. So we were told to go down south to the border, the Romanian border, because the planes were getting through or going to Romania through Gibraltar. They would not fly over Germany, of course, but they were going through on ships, going through Gibraltar and Mauritania through the Black Sea to the Romanian port, Constanza. So we were quite happy that at last we will come back and fight the Germans, invaders, because we were feeling quite miserable. At that time, you know, war started and we can't do anything because of lack of planes, and we could not stand by ourselves against the Germans. So we were quite happy to go towards the Romania. On 17th of September, Russia crossed the border from the east. So we were between Devil and the Blue Sea, from the west, Germany from the east, Russia. So we had ordered to cross the Romanian border and try to get to France or to England. We saw the aeroplane, Russian aeroplanes flying. We didn't see soldiers in because we were near the Romanian border, and they were on the more or less middle of the eastern part. Eastern frontier of Poland, a little bit higher up, more north than we were. We were down south at that time, and so we crossed the border, and we were told to drop all our ammunition, and we had rifles, and put rifles on your pilot, and it was heartbreaking.
By the Romanian police?
Yes. By the Romanian officers, we were told that. We had also the Romanian non-aggression pact. And because Romanians at that time didn't or couldn't help, because the Gestapo was already in Romania infiltrating. So on the first night, we went on the train, and by train we went to a place called Slatina, which was near the Black Sea in the south part of Romania. And then we went into, they cleaned the barracks where horses were, put the horses out in the military establishment, took the horses out somewhere else, and put the metal beds, and that's where we stayed.
As internees?
As internees, yes. They were friendly, but you know, they had to do as they were friendly to us. Now, from the day one, we were... what happened was that we were rather disappointed, and desperately disappointed that we could not get planes in Romania fly back. So that's what we were there for, on the first instance. Not just... leave Poland, but to get something to fly with or to fight with and come back and fly and fight Germany. Now, the situation changed because Germany and Russia were against us. But we were told later that, in fact, I don't know if it's true or not, but the saying was that the transport with hurricanes went as far as Gibraltar, on went to Poland, on went to Romania. But then they heard that on 17th of September, Russia invaded Poland, so there was not much hope, helping with maybe a couple of dozen of hurricanes. So they returned back, which I'm not surprised, really. So that's what we were told, and I think that's what happened. And I like to believe that's what happened. But in that camp we were, and from day one, we were making, I say we, the higher authorities that we had, our commanding platoon commander of platoons and companies and whatever it is, officers, and we had major who was in charge of the whole group. They were making false passwords, and everybody was a student. And as a student, under international law, you have a right to go back to your own country. So, it was valuable. Everybody was taken photograph, was photographed, and get a passport and everything else. Now, how to get out? Well, I was lucky because, luckily, I had a toothache, a little toothache. And I went to the adjutant of the camp and asked for the permission to go to the dentist. The dentist's office was just across the gate, main gate, to the camp. And he wrote me pass, pass for me, and in that pass was my name, Boleslav Henryk Drobinski. So I took that pass and went out to the gate, and there was the guard, and he stopped me, obviously. I showed him the pass, and he couldn't speak Polish, and I couldn't speak Romanian, but he let me know that he's not going to let me go out because there were three names on that pass, and I'm only one. So when he said that, I turned back and went to my friends. And we came back to the guard, and he let us go through. So my friends went down to the small little village there, and I went to the dentist. The dentist told me to come back the following day. In the meantime, we used to do the grapevine. You know, no matter where you are, you always hear the rumor, and somebody helping you. And the Romanians were helpful. They told us where the little hotel in that big village is, that a place where we were interned. The hotel is, and there is not too far a railway station and all the rest. So we had sort of armed with the knowledge that we could escape if it's possible. So the following day I took the same pass and two more friends. I went to the dentist and I left the pass with one of my friends and I went to the village. Don't know how many more went out of that pass to the dentist. Left, I lost contact, but I went to Venice, and from then on we got to, on the thing. Of course, we got the passport and the students, because it was already from day one organized, and money. We were able to get change Romanian lays for Polish zlotys. So we had some to buy the tickets with, and it paid for the room in which three of us were staying for one night, or two friends of two nights, only one. Then we got the train to Bucharest. On the train, we had a conductor who looked at us, and he, of course, knew that we are not Romanians. He said, where are we going, in sort of broken French. We showed him the